This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown.
We are taught so often that you are not the story. It is not about you. But one thing that was really important to me was that I wanted readers to know that I was writing this book as someone who feels like I'm a part of what I'm writing about. Literally, I am a byproduct of the culture that I am talking about.
This is Ariane Nettles. If you listen to The Rundown regularly, you probably recognize her voice. She's a lecturer and director of audio journalism programming at the Medill School at Northwestern University. And we have been anticipating her new book about the international impact of Black culture in Chicago for almost a year now. Well, that anticipation is finally over. The book is out. It's called We Are the Culture, Black Chicago's Influence on Everything. Ariane, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
Now, most people take their hometown for granted. You end up learning more facts about the cities you visit than you learn about the city you're actually from. But this is far from the truth from a Chicago native like Ariane. Her knowledge about the city is pretty much encyclopedic. Her family been here. So this book is full of history that only somebody born and raised in Chicago would know to look for. Like the birthday line on WGCI.
Here we go. Who's this on the birthday line?
Paris.
And what's that number one zodiac sign?
Gemini.
This was a segment that two hosts at the station, Mike Love and Diz, ran from the late 90s to the early 2000s. And let Ariane tell it, if you got through to the birthday line, it was major bragging rights at school the next day. But Ariane starts the book like way further back in history. Did you know that Black journalists in Chicago were major catalysts for the Great Migration? Here's Ariane reading from that part of the book.
Most people know one thing about the Great Migration, that it is responsible for the Up North movement, or migration, of an estimated 6 to 7 million Black people from the South to areas in the Midwest, Northeast, and West. It started in 1916, and by the time it ended in the 1970s, the demographic spread of the country looked very different. 47% of Black people now lived in the North and West, a vast difference from when 90% lived in the South in 1916. But not as many people understand the direct influence the Chicago Defender had on the Great Migration.
So I decided to take a page out of Ariane's book, pun intended, and start with the journalists who made the Chicago Defender.
They were really, really influential, the editorials were. So they would really say, like, hey, this is why you should come to Chicago, right? Like, leave Dixieland, come to Chicago.
Yeah, these are like headlines.
Yes, these are headlines, so really influential headlines that are going to, like, grab you if you pick up this paper. The Pullman Porters, who were mostly Black men who worked on the trains, when they went down to these southern places, they would take the paper down there. Yeah. That kind of helped it spread. It was outlawed in some places because it was seen as like that kind of dangerous. Because imagine, like, if you are like a white farmer or employer or a white owner of land, you don't want the people who are working for little money to necessarily leave. Mm-hmm. They were very, very influential. But also, they're not just convincing people, but think about the logistics of when you move. So in the paper, the Defender would have information for where you could stay, what jobs you could apply for, right? Like literal addresses and phone numbers to say, hey, when you get here, we are looking for this type of worker. You can come here, right?
Yes.
You need a place to stay. This is where you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're talking about the Defender, but you're talking about a lot of stories of journalism by Black people before the Defender and after Ida B. Wells' Ferdinand Lee Burnett. Tell me about your decision to make these stories a launch pad for the book.
Yeah, so actually, initially, my first outline, they weren't the start of the book.
Okay.
But as I started to write and I started to think about these important kind of pieces of history, right? Like the movement of people, of yes. Black people specifically into Chicago. Or I'm thinking about like the race riot of 1919. Mm-hmm. Or I'm thinking about these really important kind of things that you do need to know and understand to maybe understand some of the cultural significance of the things I'm talking about later.
Yes.
And who better to kind of use as a lens to talk about these things than the people who were writing about it, reporting on it, the very sites that I'm using to do my research, the very places I'm going to like search through real boxes of archival stuff, right? And so from that aspect, I was like, this has to be first. Like, I have to talk about the people who are building the image, making the representation, telling the stories. I got to start with the griots, right? With the storytellers themselves. And then maybe so much more will make sense.
Yeah. You talked about some of the places that you physically went and, you know, to work on this book and gather information. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear about some of those places that you loved visiting while you were doing your writing and ideating.
Yeah. So one thing I don't think I've talked about yet is that I did take a actual one day trip to the Blacksonian in D.C.
Okay.
I mean, literally woke up, took like a 6 a.m. flight there and then flew back that night. I just really wanted to see where Chicago was placed in this greater scheme of things. And it just really helped me with the framing and how I thought about things. And it also confirmed for me a lot of kind of what I was thinking. So that was probably the furthest that I traveled for something was D.C. But then I did a lot of stuff at Woodson Library. I went to Woodson so many times. They have a lot of archives there.
Yeah.
But even when I wasn't using the archives, I might say, oh, I'm just going to go through this section and just kind of eye it and just look and see what books are here, because I don't even know, right? Especially early on with a book like this. This is my first book, right? Sometimes you just need a little encouragement. And I read a lot of amazing authors, and like it just kind of helped me kind of guide me through a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So you talk about your time at Florida A&M University back in 2003.
Yeah.
And you were trying to bring Chicago footwork to Florida, basically. And the reaction you got was, what is this? And why are you trying to do this on stage? Now, these days, we can go to TikTok and see what they're doing, like, all the way in India.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you can talk about how Chicago culture started to permeate before we had social media.
Yeah. So, I mean, before that, it was really physical, right? Like, it was literally like people like us going to a place that had never seen a dance before. And then them saying, okay, wait a minute. So at first, you know, at first they saw us, they were like, boo, we don't know what this is. And then the second time they saw us footwork, they were like, but wait a minute. This is kind of cool. Like, they're dancing really, really fast, but they're in sync. So it literally went from people being like, what is this? So people literally asking us. Like, I would be walking down, like walking to class or walking through campus, and people would be like, hey, you that girl. You that girl that I be seeing on stage, right? And then, like, there's a house track that, like, goes like, hey. And they would do that to us every time they saw us. So, like, people would see me and just start saying, hey. And so, like, they loved
it.
Yeah, you could hear it, right? So it's kind of like it went from being, you know, but they just had never seen it. They just had to be exposed to it. And I use Asia a lot because I know a lot of Chicago dancers went two different parts of Asia very specifically, and would be doing like teaching dance over there in, different Asian countries. And so, you know, this was before TikTok, but closer to the YouTube, like the emergence of YouTube. And so you started to see, you know, people creating an interest and saying, what is that they're doing over there in Chicago? It's just really cool how stuff can expand. But we did not have those technologies back in the day. So it was a physical grind.
Yes.
To win the hearts of people.
And boy, did it work. We didn't even need no TikTok.
Yeah.
Your grandparents, Bima and Cadillac Baby.
Yeah.
I just, love those names. Love those names. They had a pretty noteworthy impact on Chicago culture. They ran a blues club, Cadillac Baby Show Lounge, as well as B and Baby Records recording company. And their names are in a few books on Chicago history. But in your book, what stood out to me was a little bit of what you were talking about earlier, about just the everyday life. Later in the book, you use the photography of Cecil McDonald Jr. to help kind of illustrate this point, where he's photographing people who are just living life. They're doing the things. Things need to get done, and they are doing them. what is it about these everyday people and moments that become noteworthy when we're talking about culture?
In that collection, Cecil McDonald had this beautiful photograph of a young girl getting her hair washed. And it looks like she's probably like in the kitchen sink. I can't tell, but you know, most of us know that like when your mom is washing your hair, you know, like you can't get your hair washed in the shower, right? Because you're getting your hair washed by your mom.
Yeah.
The regular sink is too small. So normally you're going to get a chair, you're going to climb up in that chair, and your mom is going to wash your hair.
Yes.
Right? And I remember there was like this conversation on Twitter where there was somebody who was black, and I can't remember what country she was from, but she had a black American roommate, and she was like, I can't believe that she was washing her hair in the sink. And it was just like, for her, that was just so confusing, because I guess she had never seen that before. And all the black, you know, black Americans were like, well, this just, you know, I mean, I guess maybe she could have did it in her room now. But like, you know, it's just not a surprising thing to see somebody wash their hair in the kitchen sink for us. Right.
Yes.
Like these rituals we have do have cultural significance. And so they may seem to be small, but like imagine what it's like to have that ritual every day with like a parent or even another grown up. Like I have an aunt who used to braid my hair every 2 weeks. And I just remember like sitting in between her legs while we watched TV, and like sitting on the floor, and she sat there and we talked, or we watched TV and she laughed. And like we, like, you know, like I'm so close with her because like we had those intimate moments of her braiding my hair every couple of weeks, right? And so like these rituals are important and special. And so it's usually just these everyday things that build a culture, right?
Yes.
And I think it's extra important for, I don't want to say all of us, because I know we're all different people, but for me especially, because I'm like, I can't trace my, you know, I can never trace my culture back to a culture in Africa. Like that opportunity has been taken from me. But what I do have is I have Chicago. I have this place I grew up in. I have roots in places like Mississippi and Arkansas and all these other things that are also have beautiful things. And I can celebrate these things because they are culture. Like these are culturally significant things.
You're covering so much in this book. And I wonder if you were to put your finger on a quintessential thing that you see permeating through American culture that is just a sign of Chicago, you know? If you feel like you could put your finger on it, how would you describe that thing?
Aaron, that's so hard.
Yeah.
You want people to be mad at me? They go.
I know. I mean, for me, when I think about, if someone were to ask me about.
Yes. Tell me about Detroit.
Yeah. For Detroit, it's a hustle for sure. You know, like okay, that's the okay. thing.
Yes. No, I think you're right. I think that places, Chicago, as well as some of its friends in the Midwest, like Detroit, had very similar structure because of that. Right. And that has still continued through the Great Migration, like always still going back to the Great Migration. Right. So you have people coming up and they're getting like these kind of like factory type jobs and they are hustling. Right.
Yes.
And that's why you see a lot of kind of like this Midwest overlap. And so, yes, I think we still have like this hustle. But I do think that very much as a Black Chicagoan, I always felt like I could do anything, right? Like I'm pretty limitless. And I don't think that that has changed because it's like, oh, have you seen what I have done? Have you seen where I come from? Have you seen where I live, where I have lived, like what the streets that I walk? Like there's nothing that I can't necessarily do. Like it's very funny because people have this idea, and I've talked with other Chicagoans about this, and so I don't want to just say this is just a all Chicagoan thing, right? But like our friend Natalie Moore, right? Like I've talked with her about certain stuff, and I'm like, Natalie, I don't have imposter syndrome. I've never like gotten a job and been like, oh, I don't think I can do this job. Like, I knew before I applied I could do this job, right? I knew before you promoted me I could do this job. I knew before I wrote this book that I could write this book.
Wow.
I don't think that there are rooms that I don't belong in. I think that other people might think I don't belong in those rooms, but I know I belong in those rooms.
Yes.
Like, that is not a thing that I have ever experienced. And that, I think, is a Chicago way of thinking.
Wow.
And I think it's especially a Black Chicago way of thinking because it's like, what can you do to me in this room that I have not already seen, experienced, been through, or that my family has not already sacrificed for me to get to, right? And so I just am very grateful. But I think that that is probably it. So it's like the hustle, yes, but also knowing that because you hustle, because you work hard, there isn't anything that you just can't do.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to say I'm Black and I'm proud. That was.
Yes. I got a sweatshirt that says that.
Hey. Yeah. It's giving pride. Yeah. And it's giving limitlessness. Thank you for that. That was beautiful. You close out the book with with another beautiful sentiment. You acknowledge that by 2020, a lot of Black people had left the city. Population decreased by about 10%, and there was a lot of, and still is, a lot of inequity, racism, straight up, that contributed to that. And I love what you add to that. I wonder if you can go to that third paragraph on page 225.
Yeah, no, this is good, because some of this stuff I have not read in a long time. That's why I'm like, I said this. I wrote this?
It's hilarious.
Are you sure I wrote this, Aaron?
You wrote a lot of stuff.
Like... To me, that sense of pride and push toward empowerment is essential because, like in other cities, the push toward equality can be a slow and strenuous process. But as we work to make Chicago a fairer, more welcoming place for everyone, they need to know they aren't forgotten, and they aren't. Everywhere I look, I see amazing young creatives putting in the work to make sure the world knows they are here.
Ariane Nettles is a lecturer and director of audio journalism programming at Northwestern University's Medill School. Ariane, this has been so lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Ariane's book is out now. It's called We Are the Culture, Black Chicago's Influence on Everything. And I highly recommend picking it up at your local bookstore.
And that's it for today. Justin Bull, Sarah Stark, and I produce The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve edits the show. Brendan Banaszak is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening to the show. I'll talk to you tomorrow.